Welcome to Creepy Kentucky. I'm Quinn.
And I'm Laura. And is there anything we would like to discuss before we jump into a new topic?
Yes.
Oh.
I have things written down to talk about.
Oh, okay.
It's stuff we've been talking about over text, but okay. I feel like we should talk about them.
Yeah.
With the podcast. But first, I'm going to open my bubbles.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, did you see there's a blood orange bubbles?
Oh, I saw. No, I did see that Rumgeist has a tea lemonade.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's alcoholic that I'm kind of wanting to try to.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, well, all right. All right. See how you do me, Rumgeist. See how you treat me.
Right.
Okay.
So the first one I wanted to talk about was the fact that they're demolishing Bobby Mackey's.
Yes. Which I'm of mixed feelings about.
Right, me too.
Yeah. I mean, if it's unsafe to be in there, and like, even like, okay, so that was like the very first Ghost Adventures episode.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, they had the like 2-hour special that they filmed. And then that was Bobby Mackey's was the very first place they went to. And it looked like a shithole then. that was back in the day.
you know.
So, I mean, I can only imagine how bad it is now.
It can't be good.
Yeah, no.
But what the article says, they're rebuilding it from the ground up.
I mean, good luck. Good luck with that, guys. I mean, okay. Good luck with that. We all know how the ghosts love remodeling projects. It's what they live for. They love it.
Maybe they think like if they demolish the whole thing,
yeah,
it'll just get rid of the ghosts.
Yeah, just rile them all up. but that's okay. You know, it is what it is.
You know.
And
then. I know it's not local in Kentucky, but it is close in Nashville.
Oh, yeah. That poor kid.
That poor Riley Strain.
Yeah.
Went missing in Nashville.
Yeah.
On March 8th.
He did. And still no word.
Still no word. They said a homeless guy said they saw him down by the banks, like he was kind of by the water, so
yeah, that was what I had heard, that he was down by the Cumberland River,
right? And that's not good.
Yeah, well, there's
that's not good news.
No, and they said that there was like footage of him falling and hitting his head.
Mm-hmm.
And
there
I'm
was
like, oh no, yeah. Yeah,
and apparently, like, Luke Bryan's bar is shady.
I mean, yeah.
A girl at work said she went there, and, I mean, she said she had been drinking before she went there, but had been drinking water, was sobering up a little bit.
Yeah.
And had one shot from that bar. Well, and blacked out the entire rest of the night.
Ooh, maybe there was something besides liquor in her shot, you know?
And that's a common occurrence at that bar.
Wow.
So.
Whoa. Oof.
Right.
Wow. That is.
So that's all.
That is not good. Oh, my God.
I heard from two people at work that. Wow. I think that's a common thing to happen at Luke Bryan's bar.
Wow.
And
today, I am going to talk about a place called Fox Hollow Farm and Herb Baumeister.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. So, and in answer to your unspoken question, no, I do not get all of my topics from Paranormal Witness, just a few of them, just some of them. Just many of them. Okay.
Paranormal Witness is a great place.
It was a great show. Like, I wish. Yeah, I wish they did. Like, I wish it was still on. It was a good show.
I always remember the episode called The Harpy.
Oh, yeah, that one was scary. That one.
That was my introduction to the Sally House.
Yeah.
Was that episode. Yeah. And it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. Oh, you should be old like me. Because you remember how they were showing the guy getting scratched during the TV show?
Yeah.
I saw that happen.
Oh, okay.
So,
well,
yeah, because I'm old. I'm old and watched all the old shows. That's what's great about it. Now, the one about the father that was, like, super religious and he kept getting picked on. That was really sad. And the one about the mom that ran off the road and was, like, being a ghost to try to get help for her kid that was still alive.
Yeah.
So many stories. But this one was one of the stories on there, and it has stuck with me all these years. So we're going to start in the late 2000s, and there was a couple named Rob and Vicky Graves, and they were looking for a new house to buy. Rob ran a car dealership, and Vicky was in medicine. Eventually, they saw an 18-acre estate outside of Indianapolis called Fox Hollow Farm. The house was originally priced at well over $2 million, but when Vicky and Rob saw it, the price was a mere $900,000.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, yeah. Red flag number one.
Yeah. But you know what? For an 18-acre farm,
yeah,
I don't think I'd question it too much.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you know what? There's ghosts.
Yeah, there's ghosts and serial killers. It's fine. Everything's fine. It's
we'll be all right. Yeah. We know they're probably going to be there. We know how to handle them.
Yeah.
We ain't chicken shit.
I'm the dog in the burning building. It's fine. Everything's fine. Okay.
It's awesome. Yep.
Yeah. So the Graves has scheduled a tour of the house. And while they were looking over the place, Rob was asking himself why the house was priced at about a third of the original selling price. He vaguely remembered reading about a guy named Herb Baumeister who had killed several young gay men in the 1980s and 90s before the police put out a warrant for his arrest leading to his suicide. So the real estate agent confirmed that Fox Hollow Farm was Herb Baumeister's house and was where several of his victims were buried.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Rob and Vicky decided to buy the house and the 18 acres of land and all the ghosts that went along with it.
Okay.
So, Herb Baumeister was born April 7th, 1947 in Indianapolis to Dr. Herbert Baumeister, an anesthesiologist, and his wife, Elizabeth. He had an...
Baumeister Jr.
Yeah. Yep. He had an average middle class upbringing, but even before his teenage years, it was obvious that Herb was off. He loved pee. He loved peeing on things. He imagined what it would be like to drink it, and he also enjoyed playing with dead animals.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the golden shower and pee thing.
Yeah. I mean,
king may not be my king, but that's fine. Yeah. But the dead animals,
nope.
Step too far.
Yep. His father took him to psychiatrists who diagnosed him with paranoid, well, up to a point, who diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia and antisocial personality disorder, but he was never treated for it.
What?
Yeah, he didn't fit in at school because his school was known for sports and he was not athletic at all. He spent a lot of time alone and had no girlfriends. So after graduating from North Central High School in 1965, Herb attended Indiana University for a semester. After that, he drifted from job to job for a couple of years, including a stint at the Indianapolis Star newspaper, where he was seen as nice but eccentric.
Okay.
Now, this was considered, it wouldn't be that eccentric today, but back in the 60s it was. He and a friend co-owned a used hearse.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a big deal now. Back in the day, you know how people are.
My dad used to have a hearse.
Cool. See?
Cheers.
Yeah.
This was back in probably the...
Yeah, but your dad didn't play with... Your dad, I'm guessing, did not play with dead animals.
No, he did not.
No. He did play Titanic, but he did not play with dead animals. So, Gary Dana, who worked at the Star then as well, recalled other employees asking about Herb's being, eccentric, and Gary responded, "Herb's just Herb."
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like people say that about me sometimes.
Yeah, probably me too. That's all good.
When?
Yeah. Nori introduced me to somebody the other day as an aspiring arsonist, and I was like, that seems harsh. At least wait until I actually do burn something down, and then you can call me,
So I was taking one of our new employees around and kind of introducing them to people around the hospital and stuff like that. And damn near every single one of them told him to watch out for me because I'm trouble.
Wow.
And I was like, come on, guys. I'm not that bad.
Yeah, that seems harsh. That seems real harsh.
But it's all good trouble.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're chaotic good.
I'm just chaos.
In 1967, Herb went back to IU, and there he met Juliana Sater, who went by Julie. She said she liked him because he was nice, fun to be with, liked cars, and they were both young Republicans. They were married in 1971 and lived in Indianapolis. Herb worked at the motor vehicles department and eventually became a supervisor, while Julie taught high school English. 6 months after their marriage, Herb was committed to a psychiatric hospital for severe depression by his father, to which Julie agreed because she said he was hurting on the inside and needed help.
Okay. Well, good on Julie.
Yeah.
But...
yeah. So after he was released, he and Julie formed a very insular relationship. They didn't socialize. Instead, choosing to spend time sharing chores and childcare duties, as they had three children, Eric, Marnie, or Marie, depending on the source, depends on which source you look at, and Emily.
Marnie.
Yeah, Marnie. Herb and Julie had an unusual relationship. They only had sex 6 times during their marriage, and she never saw him naked.
Okay.
Yeah. He was a never nude. Which all of our fans who are Arrested Development fans will get. He was a never nude.
Never nude.
Never nude. But Herb was apparently a very devoted father. He played with kids. He made them their food. He bought them their Christmas gifts. He took them to and from school. This was in contrast to how his employees saw him, which was as a perfectionist who had a nasty temper.
Oh.
Yeah. In the late 80s, Herb and Julie set out to make a business of their own. They opened the Save-A-Lot chain of thrift stores in Indianapolis. This was not Save-A-Lot food stores.
Okay, I was about to be like, damn!
Yeah. This was a thrift store. They eventually had 2 or 3 of them, depending on the source. They would donate $50,000 every year to charities for neglected children.
Aww.
Their attorney called them, quote, socially conscious, but said that Julie consistently deferred to Herb. And also their employees noticed that Herb would sometimes vanish for hours at a time.
Oh.
Yeah. So in 1988 or 1991, here again, depending on which source you read, Herb and Julie bought Fox Hollow Farm in the suburb of Westfield, Indiana. And Julie saw the house purchase as a possibility for creating a, quote, utopia for the children. The house had four bedrooms, an indoor pool, and extensive acreage with woods.
Okay. Hmm. Oh! I think I'm starting to remember this one now.
Yeah.
Is this the one with the mannequins?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. In 1993, gay men began to disappear from the Indianapolis area. The police didn't necessarily think they had a serial killer at first, because, of course, the police never think that, especially when it comes to minorities and outsiders.
Right.
So, two of the families of the missing men hired a private investigator named Virgil Vandegraff. And he began Virgil Vandegraff. I mean, this guy, they interviewed him. I don't remember if they interviewed him in the Paranormal Witness episode. I can't remember that. But I know they definitely remember they interviewed him. Zach Bagans talked to him during the Ghost Adventures episode. He is just exactly like you would think an old-timey private investigator would be. Just picture
Virgil Vandegraff. A P.I.
P.I. Da 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 da. Okay.
We gotta think of like a something like
a
Lone Order Kling Kling that we can't get, like.
Yeah. So, yeah. So he began nosing around some of the clubs where people had been seen last, and he found a man who'd had an unusual encounter and was willing to talk about it.
Ooh.
So, the man.
He was willing to spill the tea.
He did spill some tea. He spilled a lot of tea. There was tea all over the place when this guy was done.
Tea all over the floor.
Yeah, to all the floor, on the ceilings, somehow. I mean, it's crazy.
It was a tea explosion.
Yeah, it was a tea explosion. Oh, my God. We may have our episode title. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
I need to drink bubbles and record more often.
Yeah. So the man said he'd met an older gentleman at one of the clubs who called himself Brian Smart.
Okay.
So Brian asked the informant if he'd like to go see the huge estate he'd just bought because it was really cool. And so the informant said yes. So Brian drove around so much that the informant totally lost track of his location.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So finally he and Brian arrived at the house, and Brian took him to the indoor pool, which had all sorts of weird mannequins around it. Yeah. They did some cocaine and had some liquor, and then Brian asked if the informant would be into autoerotic asphyxiation. So the informant let Brian put a pool hose around his neck.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he didn't like it at all, so he pretended to be conscious. So he pretended to be unconscious for a few moments, and then when he pretended to wake up, he said that the Brian guy was genuinely surprised.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So then they went to sleep. The informant tried to get Herb's wallet to get a name, but was afraid to wake him up. Later, Brian took the informant back to the bar where he'd picked him up. At one point, he actually accused Brian of killing one of his friends, but Herb acted like, well, the Brian guy acted like he didn't know what the informant was talking about.
Right.
The whole episode left the informant feeling incredibly creeped out. And a few years later, he saw Brian at one of the gay clubs again. So this time he got Brian's license plate number, and the detective was able to trace it to Herb Baumeister.
Oh, good job, informant.
Yeah. So, at this point, Herb and Julie were having marital issues, largely due to the financial problems their chain of stores were having. One day, their son Eric was playing in the woods behind the house when he found a human skull.
Oh.
He took it to...
That's usually a dead giveaway, yeah, that something's up.
Something's up. He took it to his mom, who was appalled, and asked Herb about it. Herb said it had belonged to his late father, the anesthesiologist, and he had gotten rid of it in the woods because he didn't know what else to do with it. He told Julie he would take care of it, and he started a burn pile near the house. And meanwhile, Indianapolis detectives had spent, like police detectives, had spent almost 2 years searching for the house described by the informant, but could find it. Eventually, though, with the identity of the license plate discovered, the police had asked the Baumeisters if they could search the farm, but the couple said no.
Of course they said no.
But with the new evidence and the appearance of the skull, police got a court order, and Julie also said that they could search the whole area. So, police started looking at the farm while Herb was gone with the kids to the lakeside house that his mom owned that they went to every summer. And police found over 5,000 bone and bone fragments on the property.
Oh, my.
Yeah. They found that his pool area was full of mannequins posed and sometimes dressed. And all told, eventually over 10,000 fragments of human beings were found at the farm.
Okay.
A day after a warrant was issued for Herb's arrest, he disappeared, borrowing money from his brother to do it. 8 days later, his body was found in Pinery Provincial Park in Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
Tried
to work to Canada?
Yeah. He had shot himself in the head and left a 3-page suicide note, not in that order. Apologizing to his family for the money trouble and saying he changed his mind about where he was going to kill himself because there were children at the other place. But he didn't mention any of the murders or any of the victims in his suicide note. So no remorse about that. His last meal was a peanut butter sandwich.
Okay.
Also, there are rumors, and these were like this was mentioned in the Ghost Adventures episode. There are rumors that he did some kind of occult ritual to keep his soul alive.
Oh.
He smoothed down the sand underneath him, was well-dressed and well-groomed, and he was laid out perpendicularly to the lake with two dead seagulls laid out next to him.
Oh.
No gun was in sight, according to the man who found him.
That's weird.
Yeah, well, which indicates that somebody helped him.
Yeah.
So, the man also said there were no footprints leading up to where Herb's body was found. He had been spoken to by a Canadian Mountie the day before, and she had noticed that his car was full of stuff, but when investigators looked at his car after his death, it was empty.
Hmm.
Okay, so after his death, it was realized that he may also have been responsible for even more deaths than they originally thought.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
During the 1980s, a serial killer known as the I-70 Strangler was operating along I-70 through Indiana and Ohio. At least 11 boys and young men were killed between 1980 and 1991, and these victims were also met in gay bars in Indianapolis. The killing stopped coincidentally in 1991, which is about when the Baumeisters bought Fox Hollow Farm.
Interesting. Yeah.
So he just stopped leaving them along the interstate.
And just buried them on that 18-acre farm.
Yeah.
That's a good place to hide bodies, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, at least you have control over it.
Yeah.
Till your son digs up a skull.
Right. That's the only problem with leaving bodies in your own freaking backyard.
Yeah. So one day after Ron and Vicky bought the estate, she was standing outside looking at the wooded area when she saw a man in a red shirt walking away from her. She yelled at the man because she thought it was obviously a trespasser. However, she realized that he had no legs.
Oh.
Then he disappeared into the forest.
Sir, are you okay? Where are your legs? Where are your legs, sir?
I mean, they're the same. Yeah, they're the same place as Pearl Bryant's head. Gone. Just
same
gone.
Same place as Pearl. Yep.
Just gone. Meanwhile, Rob had a colleague at the auto dealership who lived far away and who just couldn't make it to work on time. So Rob offered to rent him the rooms above the garage at Fox Hollow Farm. So Joe LeBlanc moved in. Herb would take some of his victims to the rooms above the garage.
Oh, that's where they moved in, poor old
John. Yeah. So he, too, saw the figure in the red shirt. He also saw a figure in a gray sweatshirt with his hands in his pockets as he was coming home from work one day. And one day he actually took a photo of the spirit. The door to his apartment would fly open and hit the wall with such force that it left marks on the wall next to it. One day when he and the Graves boys were playing in the indoor pool, he felt hands around his neck and shoulders.
Ooh.
Yeah. One day he had a knife in his sink and it stood on end and then flew into a wall.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Damn, ghosties. I'm not the one who did this to you.
Yeah. Really?
I'm a nice guy.
Come on.
I'm cool. I'm an ally.
Yeah. So paranormal investigations have captured EVPs such as "What's up?", "You know who I am?", "You know why I'm here?", "You dare come to my house?", "I've been fooled?", and in response to the question "Who's here?", the answer was "The married one."
Oh.
So they thought, like Joe thought, was the one who got that, and he thought that meant it was Herb.
Yeah, because
Herb was the only one that was married. And footsteps are sometimes heard around the house, especially the bar and pool area. So, the victims of Herb Baumeister are still being identified by their DNA.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. A list of his victims are Johnny Bayer, Jeff Jones, Richard Hamilton, Alan Livingston. His remains were only identified in fall of 2023.
Oh, my God.
So, Stephen Hale, Alan Broussard, Mike Kern, Manuel Resendez. His remains were positively identified in 2023. Jerry Williams Comer, Michael Petrie, Maurice Taylor, Delvoid Baker, Mick Riley, Eric Retcher, Mike Glenn, James Robbins Jr., Stephen Elliott, Clay Boatman, Thomas Clevenger, Otto Becker. And I just wanted to make sure that we got, like, their names so that people, you know, they have names. Yeah. They had
Send me a list of their names, and I'll try to get, like, the some pictures of them.
Okay.
For our Instagram and stuff, we can.
And these murders went on for 15 years because he targeted those who were on the fringes of society.
Right.
And so,
they were
like,
easy targets.
Yeah. And it's our duty to, like, make sure people aren't on the fringes. Like, right. That's our job. So, and that's,
yes, it is.
Yeah, that's her Baumeister.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most prolific serial killers in America.
Yeah.
And it was in Indianapolis. Like, how far away from that is here? Like, shit, he could have come down here. We don't know.
He could have gotten some people from us.
Yeah. Because, like, one person disappears from one county, one disappears from another county. You don't know that they're related because they're not talking to each other, you know?
No. And he drove around just so they didn't know. They could describe where they were. If he grabbed people from out of town, they would definitely not know.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they were. They were just like, hey, I'm going to this cool-ass house with an indoor pool.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
He's got coke. I mean...
He's got coke and liquor and mannequins. I mean,
The trifecta. He's got the trifecta.
He does. Yeah.
No, an indoor pool.
Oh, yeah.
Coke, liquor, an indoor pool, and some mannequins. Yeah. That is the American dream right there.
It is. Yeah, that's what I'm missing in my life. Well, all of those things, really. to be honest with you, all of those things.
I mean, I have bubbles, but that's not liquor.
Yeah.
That's just alcohol.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. Well, that's Herb Baumeister.
All right. Well, we clearly know who we're what the helling this time around.
Oh, yeah, Herb, yeah. Oh, Herb.
Oh, Herb.
Oh, Herb.
But we have an email.
We do.
And an Instagram.
It's at Creepy Kentucky. And the email is at creepykentucky at gmail.com.
Yes, it is.
I actually follow our Instagram now.
Oh, woohoo, you have an Instagram.
Yeah, woo.
Woo!
Yeah, so exciting.
That actually means I have to be good and post pictures on it.
I don't know. It is what it is. I'm like, it is what it is.
All right. You got anything else?
No.
Okay.
I had a big 4-day week. I had big 4 days off. So I'm like tired.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was great not being at the hellhole for 4 days. Yeah.
Anytime you can get away from there is a good time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Oh, are we ready to what the hell this dude?
Yeah, he deserves it. He deserves more than what the helling, but you know.
He deserves way more than just a what the hell. Yeah. But that's how we've decided to end the show.
Yep. Yep.
Chat. In 3, 2, 1.
Herb Baumeister.
What? The
hell.
Hell.
Oh, Herb.